When life gets harder, you get smarter. You don't mission, you level up like a boss. Connect Vox Fibre to your home, starting from 554 Rand per month. Level up your experience with Airtime's Wi-Fi boosters, Vobi voice app calling, Office 365, and over 160 other products to enhance your lifestyle. Live smart. Level up with Vox. Visit vox.co.za to view our range. T's and C's apply.
I'm Duncan McLeod, and this is Tech Central. I'm really excited now to welcome Fizam Sani back to the show. Fizam is the former blockchain lead at RMB, and last year struck out on his own to build a new cryptocurrency exchange called Valour.com. Fizam, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Great to be here, Duncan.
So we're going to be taking questions too from our viewers live on YouTube today. If you're watching this on Tech Central, click the YouTube icon on the video to go through to the YouTube webpage where you can join the chat window and pose any questions you may have for Fizam. We welcome your questions. We're going to be talking about the future of Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies today, but we're also going to be talking about Valour, which is where I'd like to start today. Fizam, you had a top corporate job at RMB doing some really interesting stuff there, but you decided to take the big leap into the world of entrepreneurship. Why?
So it's a great question, and a lot of people ask. So I think in the corporate space, especially at a place like RMB where I was, things are ticking along nicely, and there's kind of a rhythm to what the system is and how it works. And cryptocurrencies are very, very new, still very controversial by most measures across the world. So when you're trying to push such an initiative in a traditional institution where you have to go through a lot of governance structures, there's a lot of people that need to make decisions to approve things like that, it's not an easy task. So we tried and we did some great work there. But I think this is a story of corporates in general. You know, when corporates get very, very large, and they have a revenue stream that they're trying to protect, they oftentimes get very conservative. And so we decided to leave RMB to start our own thing, just to have a little bit more freedom to actually build anew what we think is the redefinition of the financial system. So cryptocurrencies, as you know, Duncan, we've chatted at length, are really redefining how we think about money. And so I have no doubt that traditional institutions like RMB and FNB, et cetera, will come to the party soon. But typically, they will not be the leaders in this space at the moment. So we are trying to, we branched out to try to kind of be that kind of arrow on the spearhead to try to make some real headways and provide a beautiful service to our customers. Mm.
There are quite a few cryptocurrency exchanges that have emerged in South Africa now. Do we need another one? And what does Valour do differently exactly?
That's a great question. So the short answer is yes, and I'll explain why. So in South Africa, we have a couple of cryptocurrency exchanges, but the offering that they offer is very limited at the moment. So Valour has come into the market. We have an exchange partnership with one of the largest cryptocurrency exchanges in the world called Bittrex. So we have direct access to their liquidity, competitive pricing, global pricing, et cetera, that we provide directly to our customers here. So we have over 50 cryptocurrencies, and that's going to be increasing over time. Hopefully, we'll be actually offering hundreds soon to our customers. So number one is the ability just to have the options of a new world where there are new tokens, new crypto assets, where people are trying to figure out what they are. There's a lot of innovation. So we're providing that on our platform. And then I think the second and probably even more important thing is that the pricing in the cryptocurrency space in South African crypto exchanges has been kind of at a parallel to what we see in international markets. So we see very competitive prices in international markets, and I'm talking about the fees particularly. And at Valour, we're coming into the market with a very, very kind of aggressive pricing and cost structure. So our fees for the exchange are what we call there are maker fees and taker fees. And it might be worth just explaining that a little bit, Duncan.
Sure.
So, you know, on an exchange, when you come and place an order and you provide liquidity, you are what's called a maker. And then if you come onto the exchange and you see orders that are there and then take them and do the deal with someone, then you're a taker. So we actually charge negative 0.1% for our maker fee which means we actually pay our customers whenever they provide liquidity on our, onto our platform. So that's a world first on any spot exchange, be it crypto or traditional exchanges. And then our taker fee is 0.2%. So in aggregate, we're actually probably about a tenth of the price of some of the kind of incumbent, if you want to say, crypto exchanges in South Africa.
So there's a lot of questions already coming in the YouTube live chat. We're going to get to those questions later in the podcast. But for Sam, you've got some big backers behind you, including Michael Jordan, the former FNB CEO. Who are some of the other investors that are backing you, and what role are they playing in the business? Are they playing an advisory role to you?
So great question. So we've got two main investors, Michael Jordan, as you mentioned, and then Bittrex, which is our exchange partner. So they are both passive investors for the time being. So they're not on our executive team, and they don't play a role in day-to-day management. But we speak to both of them specifically with Bittrex. Bittrex has experience in this field for many years. They're one of the incumbents of the industry. They've been around for a long time. They have a lot of experience with security. They have a huge offering. So we kind of are able to leverage off that partnership and that investment to bring the best of what they've learned to our customers here locally in South Africa. Michael Jordan is just a fantastic individual and fantastic investor. I think his vision is attested to by many for what he did for FNB while he was CEO over there. And he also shares our vision of what cryptocurrencies can do for the world. And so he very kindly invested, and it's been a great partnership so far.
Good stuff. So next week on 11 June, I think it is, you're launching ZAR BTC trading, or Rand Bitcoin trading.
Yeah.
What does that entail exactly, and what was involved in getting there?
Sure. So it's to be precise, it's at 11 a.m. on the 11th of June.
Why?
So quite simply, we have lofty aspirations. We want to serve our customers, and we want to be their number one. So we thought, let's put that number one into everything we can, as much as we can. So that's why we have the 11-11 on the 11th of June.
Okay.
Very simple. Nothing too fancy or superstitious about it, actually. So what that entails is that, so what we're doing right now, if you get onto our platform right now, if you have either Bitcoin or Ether, you can buy and sell over 50 different types of cryptocurrencies. And as mentioned, we're leveraging the liquidity that we have access to through our partnership with Bittrex. What we're launching next week is actually a local-based platform. It's not a platform, it's the product that's on our platform that really is South African. It's for Rands and Bitcoin. It's using our own matching engine, our own technology, etc. And so what that will allow customers to do is to come and deposit their Rands, deposit their Bitcoin, so that we can have buyers and sellers that will come together and find the price on the Valour exchange. So I think there'll be really quite a lot of opportunities at the beginning, because in this space and in trading in general, there are effectively, these are commodities, so to speak, and these are fungible assets. So, and what I mean by that is that one Rand equals one Rand, and generally speaking, one Bitcoin equals one Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. And so there are prices in the market already. And so what traders will be able to do, particularly at the beginning, I think there will be great opportunities to find the arbitrage, to see where does the Valour price sit compared to other exchanges, and to be able to kind of arbitrage that price to parity, so that it kind of eliminates the arbitrage opportunities. But I think that opportunity will exist right at the beginning.
We have exchange control still in place in South Africa. How does that affect the sort of trading and launching a cryptocurrency exchange?
Tremendously. So glad you brought that up, because I personally think that exchange control is a relic from the past. It does not belong to us today, and it's actually inhibiting and suffocating startups within the cryptocurrency space and in the broader startup community overall. Now, particularly with cryptocurrencies, right? Exchange control effectively makes it very difficult to send Rands out of the country, right? We nearly lost the investment case because of that. So this is not because of cryptocurrency, just investing in South Africa is difficult. So a lot of people are going offshore. But particularly with cryptocurrencies right now, as a corporate, Valour and any other corporate is actually not allowed to go and take their Rands and buy Bitcoin or any other cryptocurrency offshore. Mm-hmm. There's no way to do it if you try to go through the banks. There's no BOP code. And so as a result, the response that we get is you can't do it. Mm. it's frustrating because we did raise about over $1 million from offshore. When we brought that money onshore, we wanted to use some of it to buy cryptocurrencies from offshore, and we were told we can't. So when we're faced with kind of regulations like that that don't kind of assist the industry, we engage in discussions with the regulators to kind of show them what's happening, what we're experiencing, so that we can make the environment better, not just for ourselves, but the community at large. So there are opportunities, though, that this brings about. So because of that exchange control difficulty of buying cryptocurrencies offshore, the only way to do it right now in South Africa officially is to actually use what's called your single discretionary allowance as an individual, which is R1 million that you can send offshore to buy Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, or another R10 million if you have your tax clearance certificate. Now, once you do that and you buy it offshore, you can bring those cryptocurrencies onshore to a platform like Valour and sell it. Mm-hmm. But because supply is constrained, typically the cryptocurrency price in South Africa trades at a premium to what it does in international markets. And what I mean by that is if you take the Bitcoin price, say, on an international exchange and you multiply it by the dollar rand rate, that will generally be lower than what you see the Bitcoin prices in rands on any of the local exchanges.
And that's purely as a result of exchange control regulations, is it?
That's absolutely, because supply is constrained, right? Many people are trying to actually bring this premium down. The way to bring that down is to bring in more supply, sell Bitcoin, for example, and then bring that down. Because if you can buy low internationally and then sell high locally, there's a spread that you can make. Now, obviously, that's not 100%. You can't gain that 100% because there are bank fees and charges involved. But that's effectively why that spread exists. Now, what's interesting about that is if you are wanting to send any money into South Africa as an individual, you can use that to your advantage. So rather than sending, say, dollars into South Africa, converting them into rands, and then kind of paying all the bank fees, and then taking your $100 and getting the equivalent of, say, $98 worth of rands in South Africa, you can actually take your dollars, buy Bitcoin offshore, send your Bitcoin to a place like Valour, sell it on Valour, and you'll actually have more rands because of that premium than you would get through the traditional banking system. So it's a challenge for sure, the exchange control regulations for Valour and other, actually all cryptocurrency businesses and people dealing with cryptocurrency. But it's also an opportunity on the other side, and people should hopefully know that and take advantage of that.
Mm-hmm. Let's just take one question quickly related to this from the chat room. Someone asks, Vibe Nations asks, so anyone can help draw comparisons between the Kimpchi premium and the ZAR BTC arbitrage, which has reached 8% this morning even. Now, I don't understand what that question means, Fazal, over to you.
Yeah. So basically, we're talking about either in FX or in cryptocurrencies, the premium that these things are traded offshore versus onshore, right? So the 8% that the individual talked about is exactly the premium that I'm talking about, where you look at the exchange rate that you can find on an international exchange, multiply it by the dollar rand exchange rate, for example, if it's a dollar price, and then look at what the price is in a rand, and you can see that there's a huge premium. So I wasn't aware that it's 8% right at this moment. That's a huge premium. Generally, it's anywhere between 1%, 2%, or 3%. I've seen it up to 30% over the past few years.
Good grief.
It has been coming down, though.
Good grief. Yeah. David Munyo, I'm not quite sure what he's asking, but he says, will all SA banks, I think he's asking, support the same time or same day clearance? Do you understand that question?
Sure. I think he's talking about ZAR deposits. So ZAR deposits start today.
Mm-hmm.
And effectively, if you want to buy Bitcoin starting in a week's time, you're going to fund your account before then so that it reflects in your account. So he's asking about same time, real time clearance. And so the answer to that is yes. So the banking system right now supports real-time clearance. However, please be aware that real-time in the banking system means allow up to about 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
So you generally have to click real-time or clear now. It costs you about 40 rand to do so. Your bank is charging you that. And then it can take up to an hour to reflect. As soon as it reflects in our bank account, that account is credited to our users. And that can happen from any account to any other account.
Mm.
Right now, we are accepting deposits through our FNB account. and we'll be actually adding other accounts soon. So what's really important, and the reason that question is coming up, is that people want to be able to deposit and withdraw their funds quickly. And so we're doing everything we can at Valor to enable that.
Let's take two more quick questions from the chat room before we move on. And I want to talk to you about the cryptocurrency prices, especially Bitcoin and what they've been doing over the last few months. But Bitcoin asks, will Bittrex users provide liquidity? I think you've answered that one already, haven't you?
Yeah, so Bittrex itself, we use Bittrex and provide the liquidity. That liquidity does not apply to our Bitcoin Rand book, right? Mm-hmm. That's why we've had to bootstrap that ourselves. So the liquidity that we're getting from Bittrex has specifically to do with crypto-to-crypto liquidity.
And then another question from Vibe Nations. He says, if you set up a company offshore in a BTC-friendly country, surely you can subscribe for shares in this country and then export capital and purchase crypto offshore and bring it back. That surely is a very simple workaround for your FX problems that you have encountered.
So there are a few things with this. No matter where you bring in your crypto from, whether you're registered locally or if you're registered internationally, even if you're a non-resident, if you bring in your crypto here and then you sell it for Rand, and then you want to take your Rand back out, convert it to dollars, say, to recycle that, to buy Bitcoin and then bring it back into the country, the bank will ask you, where was the inward flow of the money coming in to allow you to send the Rand out, right? So when you send it through cryptocurrency, the Reserve Bank and banks currently do not view that as inflow of money into the economy, and because of exchange control regulations will therefore not allow you to take the Rand out on the other side. So wherever we set up in Mauritius or UK or South Africa, we'd have the same problems. But the main thing is just the fact that we're thinking like that means there's a problem in South Africa, right? So if people are trying to structure around our regulations to just make business work, we need to bring that to the attention of the authorities so that we can actually create a vibrant South Africa. Our tax revenues can increase, our employment can increase, we will not have so much brain drain and the kind of drain of capital and talent from our shores. So there's a lot to be done in South Africa. This is beyond crypto, just to make this a friendly environment for startups to exist over here.
Thanks for the questions in the chat room, and please do keep them coming. I'm just going to move on now, though, and talk about the Bitcoin price and the value of crypto assets generally. They've been on a bit of a tear in the last few months, more than doubled, I think. There was a bit of a wipeout in the markets, of course, yesterday. But Fasan, what is your view on what's been driving these recent gains, and are they likely to continue?
Yeah, sure. So let's take a look back in history. So Bitcoin really emerged. The paper was written in 2008, and the network started becoming operational on January 3rd, 2009. So we're just over a decade into this asset class, into this cryptocurrency, and Bitcoin obviously being the first is the genesis of all other cryptocurrencies, effectively. So we saw the peak going to about $20,000 at the end of 2017, early 2018. And then it really kind of came crashing down. When I say crashing down, it came down over about a year to the bottom of about $3,200. We're currently sitting at just underneath $8,000 as we speak. The past 24 hours or so, we've actually seen quite a big drawback. But the point is this, that right now, this is a new asset that humans don't really know how to value. All right? There's a huge controversy about it as to the bulls and the bears and people, and actually world-renowned economists saying that it's going to go to zero and other people saying it's going to go to, $1,000, $1 million a coin.
Yeah.
But when you look at that volatility, it is to be expected when you have something so new. If we did not have this volatility, Bitcoin would not be what it claims to be, which is a completely new independent asset class that is not backed or related to any other asset whatsoever. So the question is that, to come directly to your question about it coming back and forth, so that's to be expected, right? We saw it climb really very, very quickly within a matter of weeks from about $5,000 all the way to $20,000. That's not sustainable. Mm-hmm. So there was a correction. The people that bought in quickly took profit at the top, started selling down, And what we've seen is that many people that kind of understand this space and are long cryptocurrencies have been accumulating over time. And as a selling pressure, the people that I have had Bitcoin and thought that it's going to continue to go down, they've been selling it into the hands of the people that actually believe in the cryptocurrency and think it will go up over time. So as that selling pressure fades, you start finding a bottom in the market. And once you find that bottom and then more people start buying, you start seeing the price go up again, right? And you're going to see this yo-yoing effect. Now, the fact of the matter is the correction that we saw from $20,000, as big as it was, is nowhere near the corrections in percentage terms that we've seen in Bitcoin over the last few years. Mm. And it's happened about three or four times where we've had huge corrections like that. So I anticipate the price, it may not have gone all the way back down, or we may not have found the absolute bottom. I personally think we have. I could stand to be corrected, but I think we're going to go back up in sometime soon. We're going to go way through the all-time highs that we've seen. The whole world is going to get excited about it. It's going to hit the media headlines all again. People that don't really understand this and are thinking that when they get rich quick are going to buy in again. It's going to go up and it's going to shoot up, and we're going to see the whole pattern all over again. So my plea to our customers and to the market is that. There's a very beautiful quote that says, sometimes if you follow the masses, sometimes the M is silent. Mm-hmm. So just be careful about just doing things because other people are doing it. You know, evaluate things for yourself and look at what the technology can do. And I think it's worth spending a couple of minutes on that, which is, if you look at anything with monetary value, Duncan, mm-hmm. it needs to be scarce and it needs to have utility. Okay, and the reason I say scarce is that the most thing... valuable thing to me and you right now is air to breathe, to survive. It's not scarce. We don't pay any money for it. So there's no monetary value on air at the moment, right? But it's incredibly useful. So there's utility, but there's no scarcity, right? On the other side, you can have a very, very scarce thing, which is, say, your son or daughter's drawing that you put up on your desk at the office. Very scarce. There's nothing like it. It's a bunch of scribbles. But the only person it has utility to is to yourself, to nobody else. So anything to have monetary value needs a scarcity and utility. So Bitcoin, we know, for example, is scarce. So there's only going to be 21 million of it when it's fully mined. And the utility of it right now is that for the first time in history, peer-to-peer, we can send money digitally without going through a financial intermediary. Now, Bitcoin itself has had some challenges recently with the network fees that are going quite high. Even with the high network fees, it's a fraction of the cost of using the banking system and the time it takes to actually send to wherever you want it to any human being in the world that has a Bitcoin wallet is also a fraction of the time that it takes the banking system to process any payments. So when you look at that and you realize that there are so many frictions within our financial system in the world, and that we kind of have organized ourselves on a nation state basis, and that our money today, our official money is on a nation state basis, you can see the value and the tremendous kind of opportunity that lies in the cryptocurrency world to break through these barriers, bring frictions and costs down, and enable, you know, a trading environment that facilitates kind of harmony and beauty in the human race.
I had a good laugh. Francois Harris in the chat room says, go scuba diving and you'll see how air can have monetary value.
There you go. Absolutely. So thankfully, we're above water right now. But to his point, he's going to pay for that because it's scarce underwater. Yeah.
So Bitcoin isn't really being used as a... Sure, people are using it to send money around the world, but it's not really being used as a day-to-day transactional currency. Yeah. Is that going to change in the future? And if it doesn't, does it matter?
So it's a great question. And the answer is yes, it does matter to both. It doesn't necessarily matter to its value, and I'll explain why. So when you think about a new monetary asset, or even an old monetary asset like gold, today, this little tiny Krugerrand, an ounce of gold, is worth, say, close to $1,300 US, right? For a piece of yellow metal, yes, it has some industrial uses as gold, but I would argue that a bunch of that value is not attributable to its industrial use, but is attributable to the fact that human beings view it as a store of value. Now, Duncan, you and I do not use gold to go and pay for our groceries at Woolworths or Pick and Pay or Checkers or wherever it is. Now, technically, it's legal tender. And actually, Woolworths and Pick and Pay and all the rest of them are obliged to accept that gold coin from you when you pay.
I did not know that.
Yeah, it's they're obliged to because it's legal tender. Hmm. However, I think based on the regulations, and I stand to be corrected on this, the official value of a gold coin, what they will accept for you is about 32 rands, something like that. So you would not be in your right mind to give an ounce gold coin that's worth, $1,300 for 32 rands. So the reason I share that is that that doesn't stop gold from having monetary value because it's perceived as a store of value across the world. Bitcoin right now is a cryptocurrency that has the most security on its platform right now. There are the most amount of miners that are securing the platform. And as a result, when there's a lot of congestion, fees go up. Mm-hmm. So people aren't using it right now in a big way. Some people are, obviously, but it's not. You can't go and spend it anywhere, your Bitcoin. But it is kind of developing and establishing itself as a store of value. So in economics, when you look at money, money generally has three types of functions or forms. Number one is a store of value. Number two, it's a means of exchange. And then number three, it's a unit of account. And it needs to go in that order, right? So you need to, first of all, find something that functions as money as a store of value. Once it functions as a store of value, then you can use it as a means of exchange. And then once people are using it a lot, then you can use it to price things in. So let's say this table is worth X amount of Bitcoin, etc. So there's an unreasonable notion in especially a lot of the skeptics around the world that Bitcoin is going to go to zero because it hasn't gone through that entire process. Now, I like giving the example of my child, who's just 1.5 years old. I don't expect my child to be able to do differential equations right now. I understand that there's a process and there's a maturation phase that he needs to go through to be able to do that. So people that understand the history of money, that understand how kind of societies function, because money actually is not just a financial concept, it's a sociological and a psychological concept as well, they will see that there's an evolution that's taking place. And we're in the very early stages of this evolution, Duncan. Mm-hmm.
Before we move on, let's just take a couple more questions from the chat room. We've got some good questions coming through. David Munyu has another question. He says, please give us a typical example. I'm sending $100 to an international exchange. What will Valour charge me when sending Bitcoin there?
Sure. So I think he's talking about $100 worth of Bitcoin because we don't facilitate $100. You can't send $100 off our platform.
Okay.
The only thing you can do is actually just withdraw Rand from your back from your Valour account to your personal bank account. That's what we facilitate. But if he's talking about Bitcoin, so the price of Bitcoin is dynamic. So we look at what the price. When I say the price, so let me rephrase that. The network fees to send Bitcoin is dynamic. So what most of us are used to is when you go to the bank and you say, I want to send my money. What's the price? And the bank gives you a price, say 200 Rand or 300 Rand just for the SWIFT fee, and then you take it or leave it. The beauty about the Bitcoin, the cryptocurrency space, is that it's kind of inverted that. So it's kind of like an auction process now. So you need to kind of say, listen, I think my payment is very, very important. I am going to pay you as a miner, as a facilitator on the Bitcoin network to process my transaction quickly. So I'm putting a higher fee so that you process mine more quickly. So I can't give an exact number right now to that question just because it changes based on the time of the Bitcoin network. Mm-hmm. So, typically right now, most exchanges have gone up to, I think, 0.001 Bitcoins to send, which is over 100 Rand at the moment, which is very expensive. We're a little bit below that, last I checked. So right now, we are basically trying to get the very, very best price that we can give the customer, but by making sure that the transaction does go through. Because mm-hmm. if you don't put enough of a fee on the transaction, then it can stay in limbo for days, and we don't want that for our customers. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're not a wallet that's for transacting right now. We're really an exchange where people can come and buy and sell. But we always get the best prices for Bitcoin, for other cryptocurrencies, and for the network that we can to offer our customers.
Let's take one more question from the chat room before we move on. Bitcoin has another question. He asks, anything you can say to us to give us peace of mind on the security infrastructure behind Valor?
Great question. So I think this is one of the most critical questions that people should ask about Valor and any other exchange that that they deal with. So first of all, we probably, I think security has been our foremost consideration when building Valor from day one. So the person that heads up our security, our chief security officer, is an individual that's had many years of experience in security. He's actually the person that built the online security systems for two of the largest banks in South Africa. So we've got a security team that's led by him that built that. That's the first thing. Secondly, that wasn't enough for us. We said, listen, he's as great as this guy is, that's not good enough. So we've actually solicited the help of three independent cybersecurity firms and experts to actually do testing on our platform. We consulted with them about the setup of the platform. We've done a whole bunch of things to make sure that Valor is as secure as it possibly can be. So that's kind of some of the steps that we've taken. What we also require all our customers to do is to authorize their device for every single time they access our platform. So if you access Valor from a new device or a new location, a new IP address in a different country, etc., we will always ask you to authorize your device before we actually give you access. So one of the other things we've done is we've automatically given all of our customers 2FA, which is two-factor authentication, using SMSs. Mm-hmm. But I want to encourage everybody that's listening to this, as soon as you get onto the Valor platform, go into your settings and enable app-based 2FA. Right? And what that means is use an app like Google Authenticator to have 2FA using your authenticator. There are shortcomings of SMS-based 2FA because people, there's like SIM attacks, SIM swap attacks, and things like that.
Yeah.
So it's better than not having any 2FA, but it's worse than having the app-based 2FA. So we provide all of these different things to our customers. Our passwords need to be of a certain strength. So we're doing everything we possibly can to make sure that the security of our customers, their information, and their funds is absolutely secure. But I think it's important to say that please be aware that every single cryptocurrency exchange, every single way you hold your crypto entails risks. Please try to understand what those risks are and determine what the best thing is for you. Do you want to keep your cryptocurrency on an exchange? There's safety with that, with Valor, for example, but there are also risks with that because you don't hold your own keys. We hold your keys for you. Or you can withdraw your cryptocurrency and hold it yourself. But please understand that there are also risks with that, because if something goes wrong to the way you are holding your own keys, then you also lose your funds. So there is no situation of zero risk in the world, ever, actually. So just try to understand the risks, understand what your appetite for risk is, and then act accordingly.
Should you be investing in cryptocurrencies at all if you don't understand really how they work?
I would say investing is a strong word if you don't understand how they work. Mm-hmm. So to me, investing is saying, I'm taking, you know, a sizable amount of my money, whatever that is for you as an individual, and I'm putting in an investment is for my future. Now, if you don't understand cryptocurrencies, just like if you don't understand a particular stock, I think that's a bad idea from anybody. Mm. Now, is it a equally bad idea to disregard cryptocurrencies? Absolutely. So what I tell people, Duncan, is to invest or to buy cryptocurrencies in direct proportion to their knowledge about it, right? And I always tell people to start small. And what is small depends on who you are and how much money you have. But I think there are two attributes. Start small. Make it an amount that is small enough not to make a real difference to your life, but big enough that it will make you pay attention.
Right.
Right. If you put a rand in, whether the rand becomes 100 rand or it goes to zero, it doesn't really,
you don't really care
that much. Right. But put in whatever that size is to you. But I still think there are risks that people need to understand. It's still unclear what the future of cryptocurrencies and which cryptocurrencies will become more dominant in the future, although it does look at the moment like Bitcoin. But just be very cognizant and do your research, as they say.
Mm. Let's go back to the chat room. Francois says, use an exchange as an exchange, then withdraw. Trust no one but yourself. Less chance of exchange hack, phishing attempts, etc. The attack surface is much smaller for your hardware wallet.
Yeah. So that's Francois, right?
Hmm.
So I would say to Francois, using the language that he's just said, that's the absolutely right advice for himself.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is many people don't even understand what an attack surface is. They don't understand what a phishing attempt is and things of that nature. So when people don't understand that and they don't even understand what a private key is and how to hold that private key carefully, there are places for custodians and other types of services like Valor where we can hold cryptocurrency for you. But I agree with him that you should understand what your risks are again. And if you feel more comfortable holding yourself, by all means, you should do that. But I think we're going to see a spectrum. I think in the cryptocurrency space, we see a lot of dichotomous thinking where it's either the world is going to be completely decentralized or centralized or hold your own keys completely or not. But I think there's a spectrum, right? Depending on people's knowledge, et cetera. And if we are trying to build a financial system and a new way of doing things, it needs to involve everybody. It needs to be inclusive and includes those people that are not very tech savvy. So what we at Valor try to do is to provide a really, really robust, secure platform as much as we can make it with the simplicity of a user face that, your grandma or your grandpa can use and actually transact on that.
Mm-hmm. And Bitcoin asks, the API, I presume that's the Valor API, states that there might still be breaking changes. When can we expect this to be stable without the breaking changes?
Yeah, sure. So we're going to be officially making that available. It's already available to the public. We've got docs.valor, so docs.valor.com. You can go to that to actually see all the documentation for our API. So we should have a good version to trade with on the 11th. The version that's already out there is actually quite robust, so we will let people know if there are any major changes to it, but people can feel certain that even using that, the current version of the API will be good for the 11th of June when we launch our Bitcoin RAN trading.
Now, something, Fazam, I've been interested in for a while is, there's so many coins out there. How do you decide which one to buy, or do you put all of your exposure into one coin, or should you take more of a portfolio approach if you're looking to invest in cryptocurrencies?
Sure. So again, there's no right answer for this, right? But the principles of investing that we have in the stock markets, et cetera, apply just as much as they do to cryptocurrency. So a lot of people say diversify your portfolio so that you don't have, really intense kind of fluctuations of your portfolio value. So again, I would say if you don't understand cryptocurrency so well, you should probably come and buy a few of the top ones,
mm-hmm.
right? If you have a bigger risk appetite, then you can go and buy some of the smaller unknown cryptocurrencies that might go up like tremendously, but by the same token, they may go down as well, right? So it really, are you going to buy a penny stock or are you going to buy kind of a value stock that's been around for a long time? So even though Bitcoin has only been around for 10 years, you can kind of apply that thinking to the cryptocurrency space. There's going to be much more volatility, though, so please be aware of that. But the idea of kind of diversification, I think, is a good one because I still think it's early days. And I think that a really good dose of humility is actually a good idea in this space. Nobody really knows what the future holds. So unless you've got a high risk appetite or you have a really firm belief in a particular cryptocurrency only, it's probably a good idea to diversify your portfolio.
Is it a bit like gambling?
So it's a good question. I think my answer to that is a categoric no. Why is that a categoric no? Because if you look at gambling is designed such that the odds are always against you and always in favor of the house.
Right.
Right. So it's literally, there's no fundamentals to gambling. You know that over time, you're going to lose money. Then you're always going to lose.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about that, this might be the inverse of gambling because I think for the most part, it's difficult to say because it's still early. But I mean, if you look at the kind of gains that people have had in Bitcoin, like there's nobody losing per se from the early people that have kind of got into the ecosystem. You know, the values have gone up. Obviously, people that bought at 20,000 have lost a great deal since then. And if they sold at the bottom, they crystallize that loss, which is actually very unfortunate. But that's why I always say that it's important to look at this as with a long-term horizon. If you're trying to save for a holiday in 2 months' time, don't put your money into cryptocurrencies. Mm-hmm. Very, very bad idea, right? You should have a long-term perspective because we don't know where things are going. The volatility will increase. But to answer your question, there are fundamentals here that make this completely different to gambling, Duncan. And that's why we have actually built Vatter. So in my personal belief system, I don't agree with gambling. I don't gamble myself, never have, never will. But I'm putting all my energy into Vatter.com. So I think that kind of shows to you my view of that question. And this is nothing to do with gambling. Mm-hmm. But the returns, if you're getting in just to get rich, may appear like gambling. And I warn people not to do that just to get rich, because you could get poor also if you don't know what you're doing.
For sure. I just want to take another question from the chat room, because it could sort of dovetails back to the discussion we had a few moments ago on security. And Francois asks, is Valor insured if it gets hacked? If yes, how much is covered?
It's a great question. We'll always be transparent with our customers. So right now we are not insured. It's very, very difficult to get insurance with any cryptocurrency exchange. So there are a couple of pioneers in the United States that have been able to start insuring some of their funds. We are in the process of seeing if we can get insured. Right now, the values on our exchange are low because we're new. Hopefully, they'll be growing more. We will be setting aside some of our funds as an internal insurance policy. This is kind of a practice that's been done with other exchanges around the world. So I think given the fact that we're very new and that we're very young, given the fact that we only had 20 million rands in funding at the beginning, we don't have, say, a billion rand in our bank account to cover losses, because we've never had that money in the first place, right? So we are looking at insurance. We are going to be setting aside some funds that we make to cover losses. And we are doing everything we can to keep the platform secure. I think probably the biggest thing I think I would share is that if you ever go to a platform that guarantees you security 100%, never have to worry, run the other way, right? Because that doesn't exist. So what I can say to you directly and honestly and truthfully is that we're doing everything we can to secure customer funds, data as best we can to the best standards that are available in the industry. Now, we need to stay humble and we always need to stay worried, so that will keep us on our toes to always keep improving ourselves. So we're doing everything we can from an insurance perspective, from a security perspective, to make sure that all our funds and information of our customers stay safe. Please remember, if anything happens to our funds, to the customer funds, or to customer information, we don't have a business. So we are our interests are very much aligned with our customers here, where we need to make sure that they are kept safe.
Bitcoin asks, will Valor Exchange support TP and SL? I have no idea what those are. You're going to have to explain for some.
Well, say that again. Will we support TP and SL?
TP and SL.
I'm not sure what he's referring to, actually.
Bitcoin, you're going to have to you're going to have to elaborate what you mean by that question.
But I don't think they're coins. They're only coins of three letters. But
let's move on. There's an event happening. I think it's next year. And I think, again, Fazam, you're going to have to explain exactly what this is. But something called the Bitcoin block reward halving. What is that? And what impact is it going to have on the Bitcoin ecosystem and the price of the cryptocurrency?
So great question. So just to explain what the Bitcoin halving is. So when Bitcoin first came into existence, every 10 minutes, 50 Bitcoins were minted into the system and basically earned by miners. And miners do three things. They secure the network, they add transactions to the network, and they also mint new coins in the network, right? So the new coins that were being minted into the network every 10 minutes was 50, right, at the beginning. Then there was a Bitcoin halving. After about 4 years or so, it happens, and it went to 25. We've had a subsequent halving after that, so it's now 12 and a half Bitcoins every 10 minutes that gets minted. Mm-hmm. And then very soon, we're going to be having the next halving, and that reward every 10 minutes is going to be down to 6.25 Bitcoin. So there are a couple of things. Some people are worried that, gosh, this is kind of reduces the incentive for miners to mine because they're getting less Bitcoin. But on the other side of the coin is the fact that as we start seeing more and more scarcity, less and less Bitcoin becoming available, and especially in terms of fiat currency, where we know with quantitative easing and central bank policies that are pumping money into the system, and these are anything but scarce, we should see that the value of one particular cryptocurrency like Bitcoin that's scarce should start going up over time. So to counteract the halving, we would expect that the price of Bitcoin would more than double, right? That would kind of counteract the halving so that the incentives for the miners, assuming their fees are in fiat currency, would kind of come out the same. So I think actually that's why we're going to see more than the doubling of prices over time. And what that particularly means is when the value comes down, there's less Bitcoin to be sold on the market. When there's less Bitcoin to be sold on the market, there's less selling pressure. And in the face of larger buying pressure, we should start to see prices go up. Obviously, volatility will still be there, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But I'm just talking about long-term trends.
Do you think the price rise we've seen in the value of Bitcoin over the last month or two is a direct result, at least perhaps in part, to the expectations of the impact of this halving?
It's difficult to say. I wouldn't say it's directly related to that because it was quite sudden and it started happening about on April 2nd that we started seeing a big spike. And then we've seen it subsequently keep going up. So as I said earlier, I think the market was kind of trying to find the floor. It may have already found it. There are many people, Duncan, that are on the sidelines waiting to buy in, but waiting for a better deal. Mm-hmm. Now, those very same people, as soon as they start seeing the price go up, they don't want to move or miss the bottom. So they start buying and it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy and it goes higher and higher. So I'm not so sure if it has a direct consequence on the price right now. I think a few people actually understand what the Bitcoin halving is in the grand scheme of things, and less people understand the economics associated with this implication for the price. So while it may have some impact, I don't think it's the major driver of the price action we've seen recently.
Not right now anyway, but it could be next year.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And as we get closer, we should also start to see many more media articles about this, much more discussions in the public sphere about this. And as those discussions start taking off, more people become educated, understand what the implications are, and then you'll probably start seeing the price rise as well.
So Bitcoin has responded about what TP and SL stand for. Take profit and stop loss. Will Valour Exchange support these?
Okay, wonderful. So we will, but not quite yet. And let me explain why that's the case. So, for instance, a stop loss, right? It basically says once the price hits a particular level, sell my Bitcoin if I'm long or my cryptocurrency if I'm long so that I don't continue losing money. That's why it's called a stop loss, right? Now, that if you provide that on exchanges without enough liquidity, it could exacerbate the volatility of the prices on an exchange, right? So what you want to see ideally is when stop losses trigger, there's enough buying pressure below it to be able to withstand the stop loss pressure going downwards, right? And this is not just on Valour, this is just on any exchange and any commodity and any asset that's being traded. So the one thing that we are focused on right now at Valour is liquidity. So we need to get enough liquidity onto our platform. We've engaged with market makers that will be coming onto the platform at 11 a.m. On the 11th of June to provide liquidity both on both sides, buying and selling. Once we have enough liquidity that we feel is sufficient, then we will start introducing other order types like stop losses or taking profits so that people can actually use that and it'll be a great service. But if you do it prematurely, it could be a risk, not just to the individual that's doing it, but to the entire market dynamic.
Interesting. Interesting. Now, Fizam, ahead of today's interview, a gentleman by the name of Mario Michael from a company called Exelia Technologies asked some very interesting questions on Twitter, and I'd like to pose a few of those to you now. He said one of the solutions of blockchain was to bank the unbanked. How can we even start to comprehend this when just understanding the technology looks like it's the playing field for developers and geeks?
Yeah, so it's a very good question. And I have a relatively simple answer, although I'll try to elaborate on it. So I also agree that this technology has the potential to help bank the unbanked. Is it doing today? No. Right? I really don't think in any big way is it banking the unbanked. Why? Because really, the unbanked is more of a social issue we have in a society, not a monetary issue, mm-hmm. right? The unbanked generally, a lot of them, don't have enough money to be able to even think about buying cryptocurrency, right? The money that they have is used to buy some of the staples, bread, and et cetera, you know, if needed, some healthcare or whatever it may be. So to think that we've got Bitcoin today and that overnight is going to change our financial system and solve all our political, our social, geopolitical issues is not going to happen. Now, I think it will start happening over time because it's bringing down the costs of transacting in finance, right? That's the first thing I'll say. The second thing I'll say is I had a friend who in the early 90s told me that to send an email took him 26 minutes. I'm not talking about writing the email. I'm talking about sending it, what we now just press click on, mm-hmm. right? So the point is, if you looked at this, you know, say, what is it now? 20 to 30 years ago, and you looked at the internet then, and you use the same logic to say, listen, you're technically competent. You have to use all this code to send an email. It's taking you 26 minutes. How can you possibly think that this technology is going to impact all of humanity, most of whom are technologically illiterate? You know, your answer could be, oh, yeah, it's not going to happen. But if you look at it in the sense of human progress, progress of things like Valor.com onto the market and other services coming onto the market that are making it much easier to access this kind of new world, then you start seeing this in a kind of a paradigm shift that's happening a little slower than we would like. But many more of the services are going to start to become available to allow us to provide services to everyone in the world at a cheaper and more cheaper cost and a more efficient way than the current financial system. But this in itself is not the solution. We have a lot of social problems, Duncan. We have a lot of political problems. How do we govern ourselves as society, etc.? These things, I would say, are even more important than the unit of account or the token of value that we're using to actually transact in society. So there are many things that are happening at the same time. And some things are crashing down and some things are disintegrating. Other things are integrating. But what we're trying to do at Valor is do our very best to kind of contribute to that integrated process to make it easier to access this new world.
Just to perhaps, actually, it follows on quite nicely from that. Mario's second question was, you know, if you're a newbie to the world of cryptocurrencies, where do you start to get into this ecosystem? How do you differentiate from scams? And related to that, do you think there will be a regulatory body where companies will be vetted and rated similarly to a financial services board type of regulation?
Okay, great questions. So scams are becoming more and more sophisticated, you know, unfortunately. So I think people need to be very, very careful as to who they're actually interacting with, where they're placing their money, you know, making sure that the URL in the, you know, on your browser is actually where you're going to, not clicking on any funky kind of links in your emails. But even that sometimes is difficult because it's becoming so sophisticated that sometimes attackers, you know, will figure out who you email to often enough. They'll pose themselves as that person, send you an email. You think you're actually talking to your friend when you're actually just talking to an attacker. So I think vigilance is key for everybody, right? And the way to kind of just start that is to start small, right? If you don't know where to start, just start small so that you can't get burned too badly. Once you start understanding, consulting with people that are in the know, then you can maybe start increasing your exposure. So that's one of the most difficult things. That's one of the things that we're going to have to deal with in a big way, is to stop the scammers trying to scam our customers. Again, we already actually have some automated systems that are helping us do that. But we're always going to keep alert. So that's the first thing. The second part of the question was.
It was related to, do you see the need for a regulatory body to vet and rate companies, exchanges in the space?
You know, there's a tendency for people that have seen bad regulation to kind of dismiss regulation outright and to say regulation is bad and rules are bad and we should just do whatever we want, right? And then obviously there's a spectrum there. I'd like to give a very simple example, which is that of a traffic light, right? Traffic light is regulation, right? It tells you when to go and when not to go. Now, whenever that particular traffic light is out, all of us complain like crazy because, you know, things back up and traffic builds up, etc. So when regulation works well, when it is there to facilitate and to serve people, it's a good thing. It protects customers. It protects businesses from the perspective that it allows the legitimate businesses to operate, and it kind of clamps down on the illegitimate operations so that they don't exist. So our view is very much one that we are in contact with the regulators. We're in constant discussions with the regulators. We tell them what we're doing. We show them what we're doing. We educate them about this new world. We've actually anticipated what the regulations will be. And so right now, to come onto a platform, you actually need to KYC yourself. So know your customer. You'll have to verify yourself. And I'll come back to that in a moment. But right now, there are actually no regulations, so to speak, requiring us to do that. There's been a guidance note from the Intergovernmental FinTech Working Group that basically says that it was meant to be in the first quarter. I think it might be in the second or third quarter where they are coming out with regulations or a guidance note where at that point, companies like Valor will have to register with them and they will have to actually KYC and they'll be classified as what are called accountable institutions. So we've already anticipated that. We've already put in the checks and balances to already abide by that. And the reason that is that if we want to be a platform that really serves the public in a big way, we're not going to be at the periphery and the fringe with a few people that want to kind of shun the regulations and shun the law and be free. We actually believe there's a great deal of freedom in having proper regulations that serve, and we're doing everything we can to help the regulators do that. And in answer to your question, yes, I think more and more we will see regulatory bodies that spring up. I think they will have challenges. We're talking about an asset class that is global, and most regulatory bodies are national. Yeah. And these regulatory bodies don't always have the same regulations. And so we'll see a lot of friction in the day, in the weeks and months and years ahead, where this clash between a truly global asset for humanity is coming into kind of contact with regulatory regimes that are only looking at a particular part of the earth that are not synchronized. Mm-hmm. And that will cause tension, no doubt.
Is that tension inevitable? I mean, cryptocurrencies have historically attracted libertarians and anarchists and people who are allergic to government regulation, government intervention. Do you think there's going to be a clash of civilizations over the whole cryptocurrency issue?
There already has been, and it will continue. I have no doubt. I don't think it has to be. And I think there are particular jurisdictions that are taking a very favorable, mature approach to actually understanding technology, working with it to facilitate progress within their own societies. But there are some that are just clamping down on it because they are afraid of losing control. Now, this takes us into new territories of discussion, Duncan, where people right now are looking at their governments. South Africa is no exception to this, and seeing a lot of corruption. And they're seeing a lot of behaviors and uses of even their tax money that is not going to where it's intended to go. People get upset. And when they get upset and they see the injustice of it, and the institutions that are meant to administer justice are not doing their jobs some of the time, they start trying to take matters into their own hands. But we know as a society that if we can get the right institutions in place, then we can actually start having a much more free society. Right. Thank God we don't have to go around all the time with weapons in our pockets, or on our belts just to try to protect our own sovereignty. But there's somewhat of a rule of law generally that allows us to travel without incurring the cost of security for the most part.
Yeah.
South Africa is an unfortunate example. That's not always the case. But there's a lot of benefit to having a regulatory regime that benefits people. So that clashes exactly because of these things. You know, people look at crypto and they say, gosh, if crypto gives me an opportunity to express myself and not be under the jurisdiction of a corrupt regime, then I'm going to do that. So we need to get better also as governments around the world to actually serve people and do it well and not do injustice or administer injustice to the populations that the authorities preside over.
Do you think it's a matter of time before a cryptocurrency or cryptocurrencies replace a fiat currency in a failed nation state?
So there's so many facets to this question, and it depends on what your definition of cryptocurrency is. So already some people, like, you know, in Venezuela, they had the petro. And this is meant to be a cryptocurrency that's backed by oil in Venezuela. Iran has talked about their own cryptocurrency. The Reserve Bank over here has talked about their own cryptocurrency. I want to be very clear that if you have a central bank talking about a cryptocurrency, that is very different to a decentralized cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or Ether that is not under the control of any particular person or body. When we talk about a cryptocurrency from a government, generally what they mean is we'll make it in crypto form, we'll give cryptography to underpin this form of money, but the government or the central bank will still have full control over the issuance of that money and how much of it exists.
Like they've done in Venezuela.
Like they've done in Venezuela, right? And like they're thinking about and doing in other countries of the world. So I think, yes, in time, that type of cryptocurrency will come about where it's just another form. We have physical forms of money, notes and coins. We have digital forms of money, which is the rands in your app. And we'll probably have a crypto form of the rand at some point in the future. But I think the main question is, will a decentralized form or a decentralized cryptocurrency like Bitcoin kind of overtake or facilitate the role in an economy? In the short term, no. And the reason that is, the technology simply cannot scale at the moment.
Right. I mean,
the example I like giving is that if you took all the Venezuelans and you told everybody around the world not to use Bitcoin, but only Venezuelans can use Bitcoin, given the capacity of the Bitcoin network as it stands right now, each adult Venezuelan would only be allowed to submit one financial transaction about once every 2 months. Mm. That's clearly not a doable system. But there are kind of technologies like the Lightning Network and others that people are working on to start scaling this. So again, I want to remind yourself and the viewers that we're not looking at a snapshot in time and making an evaluation about the future based on this snapshot. We're looking at what the trend is, what work is going on right now to inform that future. So in the future, do I think that cryptocurrencies, decentralized cryptocurrencies, could very well play a role that money plays today? Absolutely.
Mm. Francois in the chat room says, Bitcoin is a system of money that is outside the realm of governments and hyperinflation. By buying Bitcoin, you are joining a global peaceful protest against the corruption of governments and banks.
There's an individual that I've just talked about. Right?
Yes,
obviously, there's dissatisfaction with what's going on.
Yeah.
They want to do it peacefully, which is all credit to Francois.
Yeah.
But they also want to make known that it's not acceptable for the status quo to continue. Mm.
And I think it dovetails nicely into the last question I wanted to ask or pose to you from Mario on Twitter, which he described rather amusingly as the conspiracy question. He said, even though it's too late to stop cryptocurrencies, what is your opinion that governments may start criminalizing this ecosystem as they start losing control when there are no borders and all the revenue they will lose?
So it's kind of already started. We see this in very repressive regimes. There's a very big difference between repressive regimes around the world and regimes that actually want to serve their own people. So the question is, if you're criminalizing someone that has Bitcoin, what exactly have they done wrong?
Hmm.
Right? What harm are they providing to any other human being in our society? You've got to be very skeptical about systems that do that. Now, there are systems that try to do that, and I think there will be that continue to try to do that. That won't kill it. It will just push it underground. Once you push it underground, you actually have absolutely no insight into what's going on. And I talk to a few governments and regulators, and I always say, if you ever think about banning this stuff, get that out of your mind, because that's not going to make it disappear. Mm-hmm. All it's going to do is push it underground and make life more difficult for you. Understand how to work with this new technology, how to make it use it in your own favor. And rather use it as a benefit rather than as a liability. So I think we're going to see the whole gamut and the whole spectrum, but I think it's really exciting times. So
yeah.
Maybe if I can just share a couple of things that we were doing on the platform right now.
Sure.
I mean, for anybody that's listening, in case they haven't seen it on Twitter, we encourage people to follow us on Twitter at valor.com is the at valor, D-O-T-C-O-M. But we're giving away about 40,000 Rand worth of Bitcoin to all our customers in a series of contests, share and win, a Bitcoin deposit contest, a Rand deposit contest, and then the first week of trading as well. And one of the reasons we're doing this is actually to incentivize people to come onto the platform and then also to reward them, and especially those people that don't have Bitcoin, to get Bitcoin easily. And actually the way we've structured the contest is such that if you deposit above a certain minimum, then you're guaranteed to get some type of portion of that those funds. Mm. So we're really trying to do our best to serve our customers and society, and we will always try to do that going forward.
Fazam, we are running just over an hour, so I think we're going to wrap it up just about now. But I just wanted to ask you one last question. The bulls are maintaining that Bitcoin could yet reach $100,000, and I see some analysts even speculating that it might hit $1 million a Bitcoin by the end of or by the middle of the next decade. Is that remotely feasible?
So I'll answer that by asking you a couple of questions in return. So if you think about gold, gold itself, this lump of yellow metal, has a valuation of about $8 trillion. Okay, $8 trillion. All right. If you take the value of all Bitcoin right now, the value of all Bitcoin is standing at about $150 billion US dollars. All right. So call that 6 times 8, that's 48, call it 50 times, right? If you take the price today, which is call it 8,000, right? And you multiply it by 50, right? You're getting about 400,000 US dollars. And that's just to touch gold, the valuation of gold. Right. And it doesn't consider all the benefits of Bitcoin, which is you cannot send a gold coin from here to China instantaneously. You could try. It's not going to work very well. It'll take a long time and it'll cost you a lot. So there are many, many benefits that digital gold, i.e. Bitcoin, has over physical gold. So if you look at that difference between $8 trillion and $150 billion, call it a 50 times difference, you do the calcs.
All right, it's going to be fascinating to watch. I am invested in Bitcoin and several other cryptocurrencies, so let's hope the bulls are right, Fazam.
Let's definitely hope so, but let's just do our own analysis, and we think they will be.
Yeah. Great. Well, thanks to everyone for joining us in the chat room and the live stream today. Some excellent questions coming through. I'm sorry we didn't quite get to all of them. Perhaps Fazam will have a moment to go through those questions and possibly respond to them post the podcast. Also, please do hit the subscribe button. If you're not subscribed on YouTube, if you're listening to this after the fact, do search for us on YouTube. Just search Tech Central, one word. Look for the TC icon with a light blue background. Hit that subscribe button. Hit the bell icon to be notified whenever we go live with this podcast. Fazam, as always, Fazam Hasani is co-founder and CEO of Valor.com. It's always a pleasure to talk to you, and thanks so much for your time today.
Likewise. Thank you, Duncan. I appreciate it.